This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, milk the udders of language. Coming up in today's show... Ooh, let's hear that again. What does it mean? Find out imminently. Let's limber up for this episode with a little light word history. I know you're being kept awake night after night wondering why there is disgruntled, but no gruntled. The word disgruntled is not built from the same blocks as a pair of words like discontent and content, or disagree and agree, where the dis suggests a kind of negative action. The dis in disgruntled is actually an intensifier, meaning extremely gruntled, gruntled being from a now obsolete verb meaning grumble or sulk. Alright, pedants, yes, now gruntled is in the dictionary itself as a back formation of disgruntled, thanks to P.G. Wodehouse using it in his 1938 novel, The Code of the Worcesters. On with the show. The Allusionist is a show about words, but today's episode isn't looking at words themselves, but what's on either side of them. That is, nothingness. If it weren't for the absence of words, the words themselves would be rather incomprehensible. How would you know where one word ends and the next begins without the space between? Since the spaces serve such a crucial function in language, I was pretty astonished to discover they are a lot younger than language itself. So to guide me on a journey through space, here's Dr. Kate Wiles, academic and the contributing editor of History Today.
The ancient Greeks had put markers between their words.
Well, what would those have looked like?
There's all kinds of different sorts, either straight lines or dots. Egyptian hieroglyphs would have a little marker to say this is the start of a word, which is the same as dividing out words to indicate that a word begins here, and then the next string of hieroglyphs is the rest of the word. And the Irish scribes decided to put a space in.
But saves it a bit of bother?
Yeah, it saves on ink.
Smart move, Irish scribes. But why did they need to do it?
Christianity arrived in Ireland around the 6th century, and so Latin arrived, and they started to write in the Latin alphabet instead of in Ogham, which is a bit like runes, but different shape, but working on the same principle that you score a straight line into a stone or something.
And did Ogham not have anything to divide words?
Well, no, it was just, if you imagine a straight line across the page and then kind of tally marks across it. And that's what they used to write their own language, which was primitive Irish, which turned into Old Irish. So when Christianity came, they brought with it the Latin alphabet and the Latin language. The Latin alphabet's what we use to write English. And these Irish scribes weren't first language speakers of Latin. They didn't understand the words as immediately as a Latin native speaker would. If you listen to a foreign language being spoken that you've got no understanding of at all, you can't hear individual words in it, it's just a string of sounds. And if you see an unfamiliar alphabet, you wouldn't be able, or an unfamiliar language, you wouldn't be able to kind of discern what the words were in it without the breaks there. In the same way as we've now got web addresses and email addresses and hashtags, they don't have the spaces in, but we can understand them because we can, as native speakers, we can see what the words are in there. So they knew what a word was. They just, it hadn't been necessary to divide them up before then. But then all of a sudden the Anglo-Saxons and the Irish were coming at it as a second language and they needed a little bit of help.
From 6th century Ireland, the craze for dividing words with spaces swept across the British Isles and then Europe as pilgrims and scholars on research trips took spaces with them. But it took a while for writers really to master the space.
If you're reading an Anglo-Saxon manuscript, which is what I spend a lot of my time doing, the spacing's a bit patchy and you can't go by their spacing.
They're just getting the hang of it.
Sometimes it's in the middle of the word, sometimes it's between two words, sometimes you'll get a string of words together, and they kind of, they haven't quite, every scribe's different in so many ways, but in the word spacing as well.
But by about the 12th century, scribes had pretty much figured out spaces. To cram a couple of hundred years of major linguistic shifts into one short paragraph, the Normans invaded England in 1066, French and Latin became the predominant languages for writing stuff down, then after a while, English did make a comeback as a written language, but instead of using the Old English alphabet, they used the Roman alphabet, and also the same writing systems they'd picked up through Latin, such as spaces.
Spaces between words are dependent on this, that the way English and Latin works is kind of one letter per sound. We're representing sounds. There's obviously exceptions. So th represents th, and the, which is the voiced and voiceless version of the same sound. But you also get, as you know in English, useless letters like the B in lamb. So it's not a one-to-one correspondence between words and letters and sounds, but that's basically the principle that it works under. And so you would just get a continuous string of letters. Something like Chinese, which is written based on sense, doesn't need them. If you've got one symbol for an entire sense unit, then the next one is already distinct from the previous one, so you don't need to put in spaces there in the same way. So it is very dependent on the fact that we've got a phonemic alphabet.
What kind of influence was there of the shift from oral tradition to written?
Well, punctuation has been very influenced by spoken language. When it was first introduced, it was because reading was done out loud. The idea of reading to yourself silently is very, very modern. And so if you're reading a text out loud, particularly an unfamiliar text or something that needs to be presented, anything kind of religious or oratory, you need to know where to pause and for how long. And so punctuation was put in different styles, like shapes of punctuation indicate a different length of pause. So it's not to do with the sense of the units that it's dividing, it's to do with just how you read and the rhythm and things. And then that began to shift as reading became more private. You start to put in more things that help you to just make sense of it rather than just to read it out blankly.
Well, that's going to do it for all of us here at Channel 4 News. You stay classy, San Diego. I'm Ron Burgundy.
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
Ron Burgundy in Anchorman demonstrating the importance of punctuation in denoting tone, a system invented by the scholar and lexicographer Aristophanes of Byzantium around 200 years BC.
The Anglo-Saxons introduced all sorts of other things as well, like capital letters to start a paragraph or a sentence, or to pick out something important.
What was starting a sentence before that?
Well, it was already all in capitals.
Yeah.
Latin was all written, as you can see if you look at monumental buildings and stone carvings, written in great big capital letters, what we call majuscule. And those are really good for carving because it's a lot of straight lines. And that's why runes are straight lines, because it's for carving on bone and wood and stone. When you've got a quill, you can be a lot nicer and more delicate. Obviously, the Romans did have quills.
You can't write on the side of a building in a quill.
No. That's when you want your hammer out. Coming with the lowercase means that you need to start using your uppercase for significant things.
And was that just to define the fact that a sentence had started?
Yeah. So I think goes hand in hand with the idea of dividing things up for sense as well. So you're saying this is a meaningful unit that I want to mark the start of, rather than just I'm reading here and that's going to be a longer pause to indicate something new starting.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is nombril, noun, heraldic. The point halfway between fess point and the base of the shield, from the French for navel. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with music by Martin Austwick. Dr. Kate Wiles is the contributing editor at History Today. I've linked to her work, plus pictures and bonus material about spaces, at theallusionist.org/spaces. Find me at Twitter and Facebook, Allusionist Show is the handle. And hopefully I'll find you at the end of the 2-week-long space punctuating episodes of The Allusionist.